UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network, where your hosts go through all the movies, remakes, and sequels in a film franchise, and we talk about them for you. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, back from the dead to help me out again, because we thought he was dead last time, but he's not, Zach Moore.
Could have fixed my leg, though.
I know, I'm sorry, I just needed you back quick, because I need you to edit this stuff. So you don't need your leg for editing.
No, very good, Brandon.
And joining us 10 years before his wonderful debut on a zombie TV show, Lance Armstrong.
Y'all don't know who you're messing with.
That is a quote from Blade.
Yep.
What's
it
that?
Was made family friendly.
It's the family friendly quote from this movie.
This is a family show. Now, if you want to hear us curse, go to our Patreon. We go full Star Trek Picard in our Patreon. There's F-bombs left and right. But here on the United Federation Podcast Made Feed, we keep it family friendly.
I will admit, so I watched this movie a week and a half ago at like 2 in the morning when I couldn't sleep.
That's the best time to watch.
I really think
Blade
that's
movies.
How it was meant to be experienced, Brandon.
To be quite honest.
Yeah. Well, in case you can't figure out what we're talking about today, we're talking about Blade 2,
Cruise
Blade
Control.
Harder. Cruise Control. You know what's funny is I was thinking Cruise Control, and then I said something else, and you said Cruise Control.
Very
that's
good.
Kind of funny.
That's how in sync we are.
Mm-hmm. Clearly. Guillermo del Toro. This is so weird.
Right? Isn't it weird that Guillermo del Toro, why is he directing
okay.
this film?
Why is it weird?
Well, first of all, not to get into trivia just yet, but this is the only film he's directed that he hasn't like written and like been involved with intimately from the inception of it. Like mm-hmm. just coming in for a superhero sequel out of
okay.
nowhere is odd to me.
Okay.
Okay, and from my point of view as well, like Guillermo del Toro is one of those auteur filmmakers who's like, I am going to make my art house, you know, good or bad, he's going to make his art house films, you know, and he's going to make the type of films that he wants to do. So to come in and do a sequel to like a weird vampire thing, like this would be like, this would be like if Steven Spielberg came in and did like Spider-Man 3.
Again, I asked this question because I see nothing weird about a director who obviously likes the material wanting to come and do something with the material, because all this Blade stuff is right up Guillermo del Toro's alley. So I mm-hmm. see it. I don't see this as being weird or off the beaten path. Well, I see this as on brand for him.
Yeah, no, I'll give you this. I see what you're saying. And I think that Guillermo del Toro directing a Blade movie is more on brand for both than Quentin Tarantino directing a Star Trek movie.
I agree with you.
Right? Would you agree? I mean, Brandon, you're a big fan of that, but you can see where those kind of clash, right?
Right. So I don't have a problem with him directing it. I think it's really cool. And honestly, I wish more directors would do this. And that's why it's weird, is because they don't. You know, Quentin Tarantino coming in to do a Star Trek really excited me for a completely different reason, because he's all about the 60s nostalgia and whatnot. And I could totally get on board with whatever he was going to do. And I love the idea that Del Toro is doing this movie, but I think it's very weird. That's all that I'm saying. I don't have a problem with it. I mm-hmm. wish more people would do it. I wish we would get these people that love these kinds of movies. Like Soderbergh has talked about doing like a James Bond film. Like, why not?
Mm-hmm. He practically did it 3 times with the Oceans trilogy. So, I mean,
Did he do Ocean's 8 as well, or is that someone else?
I'm not
no,
sure.
No, he didn't do Ocean's 8, no.
Are we going to do Ocean's 11 sometime on Franchise Fatigue?
Sure, I'll do it.
You should.
I don't love them. Believe it or not, my favorite's Ocean's 13.
Of course it is.
13's great.
All right, Lance,
it is great.
You'll be back on when we do the Ocean's movies.
Let's do it. I love those.
There is an Ocean's 8, which is
which I have not seen yet.
Mm-hmm. And
the original.
Ready to blow your mind, everyone. Ocean's 11 was a remake. The one you all think of with George Clooney, it's a remake from one from the 60s with Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack. So
which I've also not seen, so I'd love to see that.
It's great as well.
I haven't seen the original either. I haven't seen the original, I haven't seen Ocean's 8, so, but I've seen the Ocean's Trilogy, as it's called.
Ocean's 13 is really good. It's definitely my favorite, because it's just crazy off the wall. I love, absolutely love, the subplot of them trying to start that union in Mexico. It's just brilliant.
It is. I love that.
I want Guillermo del Toro to direct Ocean's 9.
I'm in. Let's do it.
Tying it all together. So Blade 2. That's what we're here to talk about this time. But yes, you're here first. Three of us will be back to talk about the Ocean's movies at some point.
Excellent.
But Blade 2, directed by Guillermo del Toro. As we said, this is the only film that he's directed that he hasn't had like a writing credit on. David S. Goyer, who wrote the first film, wrote this. That led to some conflict between the two of them because del Toro wasn't the biggest fan about David S. Goyer's writing. He points out a lot of groan-inducing dialogue on the DVD commentary. And a lot of the expository lines were just kind of facepalm inducing. Like,
he did the commentary.
Device.
He did the commentary for Blade Trinity.
Blade 2. We're not there yet, but yes.
Okay.
Well, a lot of lines like, "Now you've got an explosive device stuck to the back of your head." I'm like, okay, yeah, thanks for that. But anyway, those are the kind of lines that del Toro was talking about. But why is del Toro the director here? Stephen Norrington, who directed the first Blade, he turned down the chance to direct the sequel because he wanted to move on to other things. So what those other things were, I don't really know. That's really the only film I know that he directed. But as you said, it opened the door for del Toro. Now, this film, maybe it's a del Toro thing, but it's the only film in the trilogy to be shot in 1.85:1 aspect ratio. The other films are shot in 2.35:1. I know we're all big fans of aspect ratio around here, so I wanted to point that out.
See, it's funny because the only high definition one I had was this one. And the other two I watched on that DVD set I borrowed from the library, which was like two discs, and they were in 1.33:1, so I wouldn't have even known that.
We only the best for you listeners. 1.33:1,
two channel audio for the other ones.
Fran has written full screen copies from the library. Watching them at 2 a.m.
I'm not paying a pan for these movies.
Anyway. Well, Wesley Snipes, who returns as Blade. He was not recast by Omar Epps in the same way that Wesley Snipes was recast in the Major League trilogy. Wesley Snipes has said this is his personal favorite of the Blade movies. Now, that doesn't mean he was on set for every scene, though, because he wasn't available for every day they needed him, because he starred in three other films that came out in 2002. So the production, being smart, they're like, all right, let's try to find a way to shoot around this. And there are a couple scenes when you couldn't really see Blade's face, but once you know, it is so obvious. The two scenes are when they're in the helicopter, when they're going to the vampire headquarters for the first time, and then the other scene near the end where it's just him sitting in his room. Nyssa is talking to him, and his back's to her, and he's like looking at like the wall, but they show enough of him, you're like, that is not Wesley Snipes. And you know what made me think of is Star Trek The Next Generation episode, The Mind's Eye, where Geordi gets kidnapped by the Romulans, and they just have some other guy that they give his visor to, and like, here, have a good time on Risa. That's what it made me think of, because it's like, wait a minute, that's not LeVar Burton. So, to their credit, they got Wesley Snipes to do, like, ADR, so, like, you see the guy talking, so that's what tricks your mind into thinking it really is Wesley Snipes, but it's like, that's a bold move, Blade 2. And I feel like today they would have used face swap technology or deepfake or something to digitally replace his face with actual Wesley Snipes. But it's 2002, and even though the budget's bigger, they don't have the budget of that kind of thing. So I just thought that was very, very brazen of them to just film a scene, two scenes without Wesley Snipes in it as Blade.
ADR, it can do some pretty amazing things, let me tell you, for the suspension of disbelief.
Absolutely. So speaking of the cast, Tim Curry of It fame and Rocky Horror Picture Show. He was considered for the role of Damaskinos, but he was ultimately cast by Thomas Ketchin, I believe his last name is. Have to look that up. Kind of a German actor. He plays the captain of the ship in Peter Jackson's King Kong remake. He was also the, spoilers, James McAvoy's actual dad in Wanted. So just spoiled that movie for all you who hadn't seen it yet. You're welcome. Moving on, Donnie Yen.
That was something I didn't wanted.
Very good. Very good, Brad. Now, Donnie Yen, who most people know these days from...
It Man.
Well, these days from Star Wars Rogue One, and Star Wars.
No, people still know him these days from It Man. Yeah, let's get it. Let's get it correct.
It, three or four movies. Yeah. It Man? Okay.
I haven't seen those yet. Lance?
You should do those on this as well.
Lance is just punching his ticket to stay on this podcast.
this is my show now.
That's right. Take it over.
It Man is a martial arts franchise starring Donnie Yen. But Donnie Yen, he was the fight choreographer here. He also plays Snowman in this film. And he has one really cool move where it's like he jumps up and does the double kick.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, he does nothing else the whole movie, really. Yeah, it sticks out. But that was really cool. So Donnie Yen, I am the Force, and the Force is with me, or something like that.
I'm one with the Force, and the Force is with me. Come on, man. That's a good movie.
That's Brandon's favorite Star Wars movie, right?
It is.
This guy. Love this guy. Now, the idea of the Reapers, the evolved mutant vampires, having stingers coming out of their mouth were inspired by Polish folktales, where vampires had stingers or fingers coming out of their mouth they used to suck the blood. Rather than using teeth like the European and Eastern European vampire mythology is, because I guess I always thought, I don't know what you guys think about vampires, but the teeth, are they kind of like straws? That's how they suck out the blood? Does anyone else think that? Am I the only person who thought that?
I think I did when I was a child. And then when I grew up, I realized that they were just puncturing the skin, and then they would just suck it out from the holes.
Yeah, isn't it like similar to like a viper or like snakes?
Not venom. They would just puncture the neck, right? They'd have sharp teeth to puncture, and then they would just suck the blood.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Moving on. you know, we mentioned in our last stream for Blade One, there was talk of using Morbius, right? The living vampire.
He's the number one on everybody's list.
Yeah. As of this recording, got a film coming out starring everyone's favorite Joker, Jared Leto, as Morbius, living vampire. But there was talk about using him as the primary villain in this film. But again, New Line didn't have the rights to that character. Marvel wanted to keep him possibly for his own separate franchise. So they didn't use him. So the story was changed slightly. And the Nomak character, Jared Nomak, was created and used as the primary villain instead. But you can see how, like, if they change a couple things, you can still fit in that character of Morbius. Now, the original script, it contained a sex scene between Blade and Nyssa. I'm not sure when it had a chance to happen. These Blade movies kind of happen really quickly, mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure when that would have occurred. That's going to be a recurring theme in this film and the next one. Blade keeps getting his sex scenes cut, so sorry, Wesley Snipes. and as far as interesting celebrity cameos, Michael Jackson was originally going to have a cameo in the House of Pain sequence. He was going to be a vampire pimp that encounters Nyssa when she's looking around upstairs. he had to drop out due to scheduling conflict.
Shimona.
And the part was given to a different actor. But that sequence was ultimately cut anyway for pacing purposes. But I'm sure if they would have filmed it with Michael Jackson, they would have kept it.
Let's talk about the real reason. They had to cut him because he was too pale to portray a vampire nightwalker.
Very good. Now, Brandon, you might appreciate this seeing as Doctor Strange is the only comic movie you've ever seen. During the fight between Blade and Nomak.
Okay, hold on. It's not the only one I've seen, okay? It's the only one of the new Marvels that I've seen, okay? The only one of those.
But during the fight between Blade and Nomak in the church section of the House of Pain, the stained glass window is a direct replica of Doctor Strange's medallion, the Eye of Agamotto. So, very cool, you know, deep cut reference to another Marvel Comics character.
I totally caught that.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay. I didn't think so. And, you know, they use a lot of UV light in this movie, you know, to kind of fight the vampires. And on set, they used, I don't know what exactly they used. Like, it wasn't as powerful as it is portrayed in the movie. But over 30 members of the cast and crew were temporarily blinded because of misuse of UV lights in the vampire autopsy scene.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? Like, if that happened to me, if I thought for a second, like, I was going to be blind for the rest of my life, I was like, freaked out.
Yeah.
Like, you imagine 30 people being like, oh my God, I can't see. And I'm like, I just fell out of carbonite. And somebody's going to say, it's okay. Your eyesight will return in time. Yeah, right. But that is, I mean, seriously, that is a scary thing. So use UV light responsibly. That's my message.
See, now I'm picturing you, like, just rubbing your face, saying, who are you? And Guillermo del Toro holding you, saying, someone who loves you.
Okay. Oh, boy. Now, this is the only film in the Blade trilogy that uses its originally written ending. The first Blade and Blade Trinity had reshoots and alterations to their climaxes, and this one went according to plan. Also, the only film where Blade does not use his sword and engage in a sword fight with the villain at any point in the movie or in the climax with the main villain. So that is your Blade 2 trivia. And one other point, not really in the trivia, but in the movie they say it's been 2 years since the first Blade, but it came out 4 years after. I don't know why they just didn't say it's been 4 years.
Don't know.
So, anyway, there you have it.
Right on. Thank you, Zach. I love your trivia. It's doing a good job there. Let's jump into the discussion. What do you think that Del Toro brought to this franchise, Lance?
Definitely the Reaper aspect, like a mutated vampire, the world, the new world that the vampires are in, so that House of Pain, all of that is so much Del Toro, like all like the goriness of it, like you have the guy getting his back worked on, that type of stuff. When you see the inside, when they do the autopsy, that stuff is very much on brand for Del Toro. The ways that some of the vampires died this time, very, very Del Toro-esque. So I think that like, some of the aesthetics of it really kind of feel like his hand had a work in it.
Zach, what do you think he brought?
Yeah, I agree. I think just having a more polished way to look at these over-the-top gruesome vampire aspects, you know? Because the first film was more like a mix of all these genres. This one was clearly horror action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think all the other kind of genres we're talking about have kind of gone to the wayside here, and they decided, all right, we're going to go full in with horror action. And when you're going to have these kind of, you know, mutant vampires with like giant mouths that open up and
yeah.
That kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff Guillermo del Toro loves. You know, like you look at his creatures but then also have a good mix between CGI and practical effects. It's gonna be, I think they maybe go a little too far with CGI here sometimes, but there's enough tangible stuff there where there's a good balance. And I think, you know, at the time, that's why he was a good choice to do the Hobbit movies, right? Because it's like, oh, he can, much like Peter Jackson, he can balance practical and CGI effects, right? Of course, he dropped out of those and Peter Jackson stepped back in. But Del Toro, I mean, he likes that kind of tangible nature to things. And the horror element, right? He's kind of a weird horror guy, right? He loves that kind of stuff.
I liked this movie. You know, I thought it was pretty good. I liked what Guillermo del Toro brought. I think he brought a lot of interesting types of, like, action sequences. Like, right at the beginning there when he's, like, jumping out the window and the camera's following him. Like, that's some pretty cool action sequences. And I think that, as I said earlier, I think this movie is a very good fit for him. And what I would like to see more. I thought Ron Perlman was really fantastic in this movie. And, you know, I love Ron Perlman, right? So anytime Ron Perlman's on screen, he's, you know, it's automatically a 5-star film. So, well, maybe not a 5-star film.
He was in Star Trek Nemesis.
5 stars.
But that was kind of disappointing, though, because, like, I really did, like, because I like Ron Perlman so much just as an actor, you know, and, like, his presence, right? I kind of wanted the big final battle to be between Blade and Ron Perlman. And by the time you get to this generic monster guy, I was like, yeah, that's fine, but I don't really care about these bad guys.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Absolutely. Should have been Ron Perlman all the way to the end.
You know, because, like, there was so much brewing with the two of them throughout the movie. Would have been good to see them actually have a confrontation instead of just Blade just, you know, handling him. Like you know, we go into this already knowing that Blade's going to win in the end, right? But, like, it would have been nice to see him and Perlman kind of struggle and kind of duke it out, because it seems, and it would make sense if Perlman would be, like, the most formidable of the people he was working with, because that just makes sense, and it just adds weight to his character already that he's, you know, exuding. So I think that would have been preferred.
This is obviously, they have a bigger budget this time, and you can definitely tell. Like, you're talking about Blade jumping out of windows. Like, they do a little too much CGI Blade sometimes, I think, because it's the early 2000s. They think CGI can do anything. When the vampires first show up in Blade's hideout.
Oh, that's my favorite sequence of the movie.
Yeah, where they're doing the kind of acrobatics, and they're all quiet. They're wearing these really cool costumes.
The Ninja Assassin League of Assassins theme.
Yeah, those are awesome. And I couldn't help but think, like, talking about, you know, bigger is better, right? More polished is better. This is a case of more polished being better. Because you remember in the first film, they're, like, wearing motorcycle helmets and leather and sunscreen to be protected from light. But this time they got this full, like, hooded thing with the red eyes. And I thought that was really cool. Although, and this is a really cool fight scene. Although probably the most egregious special effect in the whole movie is CGI Blade sword fighting. I think it's Nyssa.
Yeah.
At this point, you don't know it's her, but in front of the big lights, I'm like, why did Blade just become CGI? Like, it's 2004.
Because it's too fast.
It's 2002. You don't have the technology yet to do this. I just, like, you could have easily lifted that, I don't know, what, 10 seconds out.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have looked as weird because it's like you see Wesley Snipes and all of that, and now it's CGI Blade for some reason because they did a backflip. And that's what was, and then the first one they didn't have, they knew they couldn't do it, so they just didn't do any of that. They had to use actors, they had to use stuntmen. With this one, I think they kind of went a little too far with the CGI in that scene.
It's a tough time with CG because you could do so much, but it didn't quite look right. I just watched Panic Room for another podcast that I'm going to be doing. And I mean, like, even there, the big sequence in Panic Room is all CG stuff. And if the camera is doing things that you could not possibly do physically, like it goes through the handle of a coffee maker in like a long motion. And the sequence is really cool, but things look CG. And there's a shot where a cell phone gets knocked off a bed and comes towards the camera. And you can tell it's like a CG telephone, right? So that he can get it to go exactly where he wants. And it's tough because you could do so much, but it doesn't quite look right. So I don't know. Does it take away from the movie for me? Not really, I guess. But, you know, we've definitely come a long way with our CG effects in movies.
But I will say, one of my biggest, like, criticisms of the first one, and hey, low budget, right? Lower budget, relatively speaking. How the vampires get killed and evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
That was such, like, a PlayStation special effect, right? But I feel like now, and even the next one, you know, they've kind of perfected that. And it fits in, you know, when Blade kills a vampire, it's very consistent effect throughout all three movies. It proves every time. I think this time it definitely melded with the surroundings better.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I love Ron Perlman. Who doesn't like Ron Perlman?
He's great. Right?
So, yeah, I wish he would have been the main villain. You know,
yeah.
I think that would have been better than Nosferatu over here or his crazy son. But yeah, Lance, big fan of Blade. You watch these, you know, Brandon and I are new to this trilogy. You watch it since they come out.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on Blade 2 back in the day, and does it hold up for you?
It does hold up. And of the Blades, I think I've seen this one the most. Mostly, I think, because you see Blade 2 on TV a lot, of the time, like on TNT or something like that, or back in the day when Spike TV was a thing, they would show this movie and they'd show the first Blade, but they show Blade 2 a lot. And I think what I like about this one is just the novelty of Blade working with the vampires, both of them coming together, the two communities coming together to fight a common enemy, you know, like the whole, the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of deal, which is pretty much spelled out by Blade in this. And he's like, you know, keep your enemies close, your friends close, but your enemies closer. He actually says that.
Keep your enemies close, but your friends closer.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I like the dynamic that was going on here. I like some of the other vampire world building that went on in this, because in the first one, you had this like vampire bureaucracy type of deal. Like everybody's like in big business together, and like this kind of undercover underworld organization of businessmen, vampires holding the empire down. But then in this movie, you get a little bit different. You have this dynastic old world system where you have like a lord, like, you know, Lord Damas, however you say the guy's name. I pronounce it differently each time. So you have him, and then you have his daughter, who's like, you know, basically there's like this evil royal vampire family.
What a twist that was. Oh, it's his daughter.
Yeah, no, it's so it's it's.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, you did. So you have that aspect of it. And I think that's an interesting angle to lean into, especially considering how old vampires are and how they've existed for however long that they have. It makes sense that you could have both. You could have a vampire society that has, you know, this old blood, old guard of a royal family type of situation, and this new guard that has set up big business and kind of works things that way.
Yeah, I think that's a common thing too in like, where do you go with sequels, right? Well, let's have him team up with his enemy to fight a bigger enemy. Like, it's, you know, X2, movies like that. But that was cool to see him have to work with a team, people that he didn't like, kind of establishing his dominance. Like, I love the scene where he and Perlman go back and forth.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, exciting, isn't it? Right.
All the memes.
Yeah, that's all the memes come from that scene of the two of them. But let's talk about one major thing, I think, is bringing back Whistler. We were joking about it. I was joking about it at the end of the last one. Brandon, you had not seen the second one yet, so you didn't pick up on that. But What did you think about them bringing Kris Kristofferson back?
I was like, I was confused for a minute, because like I said, I did watch this pretty earlier, and I'm like, didn't he die? I thought, and then I'm like, I went to look it out, and I'm like, no, well, they didn't actually show, because they really panned away in the first movie.
Heard the gunshot.
Yeah, I mean.
Clearly the intention of the first movie was he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a moment, that was a thing, you know, and, oh, he turned anyway, and he didn't kill himself in time, like, such huge retcon, right? A huge retcon. Yeah. For the purposes of the story, I get that they used Whistler as bait to get Blade out, because as they tell him at the end, he's your only weakness, man.
Yeah.
You know? So that makes sense, I guess, but still, that kind of undercutting of a beat that was so strong in the first one, and they even flash back to it. You
they
know?
Do.
So to like remind you of what happened.
I'm glad that they did, because that must have been where it was, where I'm like, didn't he die in the first movie? Right? And so I'm glad that they did put that clip in, believe it or not.
And I can only assume that Kris Kristofferson has a bum leg himself, which is why I was joking on our shtick at the beginning.
Yeah.
Right? It's like he's a vampire, but he still has a bum leg. They at least have I couldn't even fix my leg, right? They put that in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy Blade and Whistler together. I think Whistler, he probably has more to do in this one than he does in the first one. He has a lot of great stuff to do. But you spend the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of this movie with this whole, like, let's get Whistler back. Okay, mm-hmm. Now we can move forward. So I don't know. That was, mm-hmm. like, I know people really liked that relationship, but it's kind of like, and this movie hasn't come out yet, right? As of this recording, but Wonder Woman 1984,
mm-hmm.
they're bringing Steve Trevor back. Like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Like, his death was a big deal in the first movie, and you know he's going to die again. It's a comic movie, Brandon. I know you don't watch these, but Captain Kirk was in Wonder Woman, and he died. Okay, it's a big deal.
William Shatner?
Now he's back in the second one, and it's he's gonna die.
Did he fall off a bridge?
So that's my deal there. Now, do I enjoy him in the movie? Of course I do, right? And when I near the end of it, I was like, oh, I'm glad he's back, right? But still, mm-hmm. you cannot just like say, oh, that's fine, whatever. Like it was a big. There's only like three characters in the first movie.
Yeah.
You know, one of them died. It was a huge deal. Bringing him back like so nonchalantly was surprising and disappointing. Although once he was back, I liked it. So that's my take on that. Did you guys think that he was going to be a villain or something? Because when he came back, they were playing it real ambiguous.
I didn't think he would be. No.
Because like he disappears from his post and then he opens the door of the truck. And I'm like, oh, where'd he go? What's going on? Is he an inside job?
No. I didn't think that.
You didn't think so?
No, I didn't think so either.
I think it would have been cool.
Yeah? If he was a bad guy or if they played it up more?
Well, if he was a bad guy, that would have made his death and resurrection have a price. Hmm. Like, oh, he's back, but he's different now. And Blade has to kill his father figure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it would have been cool. Because they were playing with that when he first came back.
Right. Yeah, no, I didn't really think it would be the case, though.
But no, they went with Norman Reedus.
Well, opening that up here, so as a new viewer to this movie, I'll say that the one thing that I didn't appreciate was that Norman Reedus' character turned out to be, like, a bad and, like, infiltrating Blade's operation there. Because
Scud!
To me, like, I would think that Blade is a better character than to be fooled by one of these familiars.
But he said at the end, I was on you the whole time. Or something like that. Right?
Then why would he let him work with him? I don't know.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Yeah, there you go. They say it in the movie.
They do.
I like that he ended up being a bad guy, because first I was like, who's this replacement Whistler they got? Like, is this the guy from The Walking Dead? I was like, who is this, right? I'm like, who's this guy?
Daryl Dixon.
And then the whole, like, oh, he has a tattoo inside the lip. Blade never looked there.
Yeah.
So, but the double switch at the end where he's like, oh, I got you. No, I got you, right? Because Blade being one step ahead, I think, paid it off. I agree. That was like this douchey new character who you don't like already.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the character.
What's up, B?
Yeah. He calls him B. Like, whenever characters call other people by, like, their initials, like JL, for example, on Star Trek Picard, I'm prone to not like it. So it's just like, I was glad that he got blown up at the end. It was very satisfying.
So don't call you ZM.
No. Zed. This is like a Canadian thing. Now, this is, I think I might be remembering this correctly. I don't know if Guillermo del Toro was approached to do Terminator 3.
Mm-hmm.
He may have, he may not have. He's been attached to so many things. But watching this movie, I said, and this came out in 2004.
Yeah.
And Terminator 3 came out in 2003. And watching this, I thought to myself, this should have been Terminator 3. Because Norman Reedus here looks so much like an older Edward Furlong. Like, if you told me that was Edward Furlong 10 years older, I would believe you. Okay? Plus, Wesley Snipes totally needs to be a Terminator.
Yeah.
Ron Perlman could have been another Terminator. And Guillermo del Toro directing it. It would have been so awesome. So I would have liked to see this creative team make Terminator 3 and just recast John Connor with Norman Reedus, because he at least looks like Edward Furlong. And that's what made me think of it, just because he just resembled him so so closely.
I like the Terminator 3 we got.
Thanks, Brandon. Moving on.
I see what you're saying, though. Like, yeah, there, I think it would be interesting to have him do that, but I don't know. It's a tough comparison to make, right? So I'm not, I guess I'm not familiar enough with this movie to be able to make that comparison to seeing it that way.
Like, come on, Ron Perlman's a Terminator? Like, he wears a sunglass, as most of them do, right? But he wears the sunglasses the whole time, mm-hmm. right? It's like a vampire thing, right? Even mm-hmm. at night, we're going to wear a sunglasses.
Right.
So it's just so very Terminator seeing these guys around with their sunglasses beating each other up. So all these elements together is what made me think of that. But talk about this team of vampires that Blade has to like train and work with. And sadly, I think they're mostly disposable. Mm-hmm. Like, you could get rid of about half of them. It wouldn't matter. Like, I would keep Ron Perlman and Donnie Yen and maybe one other one, right?
Yeah.
But there's three mm-hmm. other ones, and they all get disposed of. And
like, the big guy with his girlfriend. Yeah. Just like, eh.
Like, those two, like, that's a classic, like, zombie movie trope, right? Where somebody gets bit but doesn't tell anybody, and he's going to turn and kill yeah. everybody. I thought they were going to do more with that, like, because the big guy, he gets bit, and the girlfriend's like, oh, what's wrong? He's like, no, I'm good, I'm good. He just covers up his bite. Then right. he turns at some point and then like, kills like three people and then kills himself immediately. I was like, well, that's...
Yeah.
I thought that was a really lame payoff to an interesting setup. Like, oh, mm-hmm. good, finally they're going to do something. The only reason they did that was to wipe out all the extra members of the team that didn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, when they're crawling around the tunnels. Because they just had to keep, you know, whittling it down. And then, of course, you know, Nyssa and Blade, although they didn't consummate their relationship, even though it was in the script, right? Mm-hmm. I liked their vibe better than the romance in the first movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. These two are on definite more equal footing also. Like, she can handle herself. She, you know, she comes from a dominant type of family. She knows what's going on. So it's totally different dynamic here.
Was the end a little too melodramatic, though, with them in the sunlight? Like, where she's in his arms.
Well, I think it was like that because there was no love scene between them. That had to be it.
Okay.
It was very touching.
I can see that.
Very touching.
I did wonder, though, you know, remember when I keep calling him Nosferatu, but when he was going to, like, go and get in his helicopter and they were going to leave, but then Nyssa shuts everything down. And then, of course, later on, they go out there and there's that moment we just mm-hmm. talked about. Like, do those guys just leave at some point? Like, well, I guess he's not coming.
Yeah, I guess so.
Took off this one. I'll say it, like, I liked the first one better mm-hmm. than this one, and I think it's just because I liked the 90s feel, the gritty feel,
mm-hmm.
The more I don't know, tangible feel. The first one, this one was more polished, but sometimes having a bigger budget is a double-edged sword, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, it can be.
So too many characters, maybe, you know, for the concept of a sequel, I think the story was the right way to go, because what do you do with, like, he's just gonna keep hunting vampires? Well, no, let's have him fight with the vampires for another threat. But of course, once you play that card, right, where do you go from there? We'll get into that next time.
Oh, man.
Well, based on what you said there, so, like, I personally think I preferred this one a little bit more than the first one, mostly because of some of the neat action sequences. You know, I went with it. It was fun. I really liked seeing Ron Perlman. And as much as I was confused that they brought him back, you know, Kris Kristofferson's character is a good character. Right? I liked him.
He is.
I look forward to seeing him in the next movie.
Also, like, I mean, we didn't like Scud, but I did like Whistler and Scud's interaction the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
yeah,
especially,
they didn't like each other.
Yeah, which was great. And then, like, especially, like, when Scud calls him Honky Tonk.
Honky Tonk!
It's hilarious. Just, like, it's a nice little throwaway line there, but it's hilarious. It fits exactly what those characters are like yeah. to a T.
Well, yeah, and Whistler got to be in the climax, unlike last time, because, yeah. you know, he was dead! The tradition continues, though, of Blade, you know, getting his shirt ripped off,
yep.
and strapped down to something, showing off Wesley Snipes' physique.
I'm sure that's probably in Snipes' contract. He's like, I must show off my physique and my six-pack abs so everybody can see how ripped I am.
Blade, right, he gets away with a lot of stuff because the villains, like, need him.
Uh-huh.
Like, all right, we can't kill him. we need his blood. We need him for this. We need him for that, right? Because, I mean, it's the same kind of thing that happened both times.
Yes.
Or they would have, you know, just straight up killed him.
He, you know, he's proven himself, in you know, indispensable because he is a special oddity in their universe.
Mm-hmm. There has been no one else in the history of the world who has been bit when they're pregnant.
Apparently.
Hmm. Vampires don't like pregnant chicks, huh?
I guess not. But you know what? Like every other
it's an acquired taste,
every other story has like these chosen one type of thing. So like, I guess Blade is that for this type of universe.
Right. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that, with him being the only one. I mean, yeah, because it is what is unique about the universe. It's what makes him different.
He's the Daywalker.
Exactly. The Daywalker. And that's such a cool nickname, too.
What, seriously, I wish when they remade Blade, they should just call it Daywalker. But they won't, because they got to say, remember Blade?
It would be Blade. Daywalker.
Oh, yes! That's what's going
to Daywalker, a Blade story.
Yeah, Daywalker, a Blade story. Coming to Disney Plus 2022.
That's good. Oh, man. All right, guys, I'll have a question for you. How many vampire bites occurred in Blade 2?
I don't think there was that many. I think there was like 3.
Okay, Brandon says 3. Brandon is wrong, by the way.
I think... I'm going to guess 11.
11? Okay, Lance is much closer. But if this were Price is Right, Brandon would win.
Did I even watch this movie?
because I counted a total of 9.
Hmm.
All right. The blood bank workers at the beginning, that's 2.
Okay.
The drug dealer, that's 3.
Okay.
The priest, that's 4. Lighthammer, that's 5.
That's the dude with the girlfriend?
Yeah.
Okay.
Assad, that's 6.
That guy.
He was the most worthless one of the
group.
He
was. He really was.
I forgot about him in this entire conversation. It's like, how many of these guys were there? It's like the same problem the Lost World has with Jurassic Park. And I know you love the Lost World, Brandon, don't you?
I love most of the Lost World. I don't like the Godzilla ending to it, but...
Of course you do. But, like...
Why do I do this show?
Jurassic Park has, like, 7 characters. Yeah. Lost World has, like, 35 characters. And, like, who's died? Who cares? Whatever. You know, getting back to the count here. When Novak breaks into the compound at the end, he kills all the security guards.
Yeah.
We see him actually biting one. Mm-hmm. And there's all these dead guys around him. I don't think I count that as one.
Okay.
You know, maybe he just killed everybody and sucked the blood of this one guy. So that's 7. When they killed Nosferatu, that's 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nyssa's 9, because she gets bit as well.
Yeah.
So those are the 9 I came up with. Now, I do have an addendum. Last time we said there were only 5.
Mm-hmm.
There were actually 6, because Karen's ex-boyfriend also got bit. We forgot about him. Because they both get bit.
You want to talk? Can we talk about us?
Yeah. What an amazing scene. So, 6 for the first movie, 9 for the second. That brings us to a grand total so far of total franchise vampire bites at 15.
Who's Karen?
So, let's rate the movie. Out of 5 fangs. Lance, how many fangs would you give Blade 2?
I'm going to give it 4 fangs. Because I really liked it. I like these first 2 movies equally, but just for different reasons.
Fair enough. As for me, I'm going to go with 3.5 fangs. I liked it, but just a half step under the last one. A lot of things that improved on like the love story aspect. The lack of a love story and more of like a mutual respect platonic thing he had going on with Nyssa. The vampire team is a cool concept. There was just so much personality in the first one, which I enjoyed so much. That was a little lacking here. So that's probably why I still favor the first one, but I really enjoyed both of these. So what about you, Brandon?
I'm going to give it the same rating I gave the last one. I give it a 3. And if I'm ranking them, I definitely think this one's a little bit better than the other one, but not statistically significant enough to warrant anything like a half star or extra star or anything like that. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, the general consensus seems to be this is the better of the 2. Of the 2 Blade films. But final question then. Is this franchise fatigued yet? Lance, what do you say? Not knowing what's coming.
Nope, it's not.
Okay. I say no as well. I think they've, like this movie, they expanded the vampire mythology like you were talking about earlier. Plenty of ways to keep doing that. You know, maybe, I don't know, here's a crazy idea. What if he meets Dracula or something? That'd be a real cool idea, right? The original vampire? I think that'd make an awesome, like, cap to the trilogy for Blade to fight.
I don't know. They'll never do that. That's weird.
Epic. That's ridiculous. I know. Ridiculous. They wouldn't do it. But that's just a suggestion.
Only if they get Bela Lugosi.
What if we just have somebody hold a cape in front of his face the whole time?
I love it.
Say it's him.
Yeah, I mean,
I love you, Brandon. Do you think his franchise is fatigued yet?
You know what? For me to get 2 3-star movies in a row, I'm going to say, yeah, I think this is fatigued. So,
but what does it take for you to say no? Does it have to be 4 stars in a row? Is 3 not good enough for you?
3 is not good enough for me, I don't think. I like it.
You're such a snob. I know it's called Children of the Corn Part 4, but come on. I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, man. When we get to Children of the Corn movies, I got like a love-hate relationship with those. As terrible as those movies are, you know, like, yeah, I'm like, let's have another Children of the Corn movie.
All
right. So, I love hate. Godzilla, on the other hand, I'm like struggling to get through the back half of my Criterion set because those aren't very good movies.
Well, once you hit the 70s, it's tough. How far are you in the Godzilla movies?
So I watched them with my kids in English, but I watched them in reverse order for the English ones that were in the Criterion set. And then in Japanese, I was watching them in chronological order in Japanese. And so I've seen all the English versions, and I've seen all the Japanese versions on the first half of the set. I don't know. I got 6 left, I think it is, out of the 15. So
the 70s are tough, but I really like the Mechagodzilla movies at the end.
I don't.
The last two. So, Blade, Lance says it's not fatigued. I say it's not fatigued. Brandon says it is. We'll find out what we think next time in Blade Trinity. All 3 of us will be back to talk about the 3rd movie. We are the Blade Trinity.
We are the Trinity.
We have to talk about it. So, Lance, thanks so much for joining us again to talk about Blade. If people
thanks
want to find
me.
You out there online, where can people find you?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias.
Zach, when you're not showing us your lip tattoo, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Alone to Smallville. Talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show over there. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysSmallville with 1S. And Brandon, when you aren't getting blinded by UV light, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me over on The Line, which is on Trek FM. It's a podcast all about Star Trek Picard. And you can find me on the Fandom Podcast Network with my friends Chris and Tom. We have a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where we cover all of Hitch's films in chronological order. And this last episode that we had is on the underrated masterpiece Lifeboat. So if you haven't seen Lifeboat, you should check it out, because the entire movie takes place on one life raft. And it's a very large life raft, but it's a pretty cool movie. I definitely recommend it. Yes, thank you so much to Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson for being executive producers of the network. Thank you so much to Zach Tripp for creating our wonderful theme music. And thank you to our wonderful patrons of the UFP network. If you want to find some cool Patreon content, for $5 a month, you can go and listen to some exclusive audio commentaries where Zach and I do commentaries for Star Trek episodes. And we just released an episode on Threshold, as well as the animated series episode The Survivor. And please give us a rating and review. That helps us and helps others find the show. That's the best way to get us out there, to spread the word, is to, you know, to retweet us, to infect the viewers. Don't bite them. Don't bite your fellow listeners. Retweet, because that helps. Not even a chuckle or a smile. I thought it was funny. Nothing.
That's great, Brad.
Well, I guess that's all we got for you this week. Until next time, when we cover Blade Trinity, which I'm sure it's great. Ryan Reynolds is in it. I mean, hey.
And Jessica Biel.
And Dracula.
Well, until then, don't bite me on the neck.
You suck. That was a vampire pun.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.
But yeah, I think that this one was I don't know. I had nothing to say. Someone else say something.
This one was what?
I don't know. I had nothing. I was going to see what came out, but nothing came out.
Okay.